Still worshipping God? My lord. Last thing I heard, he started worshipping me!
This is the Extra Hot Gripe Podcast, episode 33, for the week of June 9th, 2014. I am Red Hot Texas Style Chili, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Chief Crunchy, Sarah D. Bunting.
Now in Blue Raspberry.
Inevitable Sunburn, Tara Ariano.
But I reapplied!
And Crazy Daisy, Joe Reed.
Sploosh!
Thank you, everybody, for bearing with us during our hiatus. Dave was not able to
get, it's all my fault,
get the 2.0 redesign up and also produce the podcast, which is quite labor intensive.
Tis.
If you ask him, he will tell you. Yeah. But to celebrate our return, we've brought back our beloved Joe Reed. Hi, Joe!
Joe!
Hey, guys!
Hi, Joe!
Very happy to be back.
This is a good time to have Joe back because we're doing a roundup of lots of topics and lots of shows, and our subject this week
is Dave, the summer TV weather report. We're going to report on the highs and lows of the summer TV weather system.
As I put it in the doc, maybe we each make one respectable pick and one beloved garbage one. So that's what you will be hearing today.
All right. So shall I start?
Sure.
Please.
Okay. So my TV high for the summer, and it's not a record high, but for summer weather, I'm into it. Mm-hmm. And that is the Showtime show Penny Dreadful.
Cosign.
Which in our house is called
Penny Dreadful. I don't know why that started.
It's time for Penny Dreadful. And
Swedish Chef presents Penny Dreadful.
If you're not at all familiar with Penny Dreadful, it is basically
a monster
mashup, really.
Yeah,
it's a graveyard smash.
It really is.
It's a Victorian take on all the classic movie monsters. You got your vampires.
Yep.
You've got your Egyptian mummies,
yes,
sort of.
That may also be a golem. It's not clear exactly what that thing is.
They play
is.
Around with it. They got their werewolves.
We believe. They haven't actually made their appearance.
That's true,
yet.
But they're in the credits. So I'm assured that we will see a werewolf in the show. And we got Dorian Gray's.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen his portrait yet.
No. And it's just sort of a eclectic kind of mess. It's not the best written show. It's not the most coherent show.
No.
But it just sort of hits your lazy summer watching buttons.
Yeah.
And like where things just happen. It's like, well, I mean, hang on a sec. Spoilers aho, fun ahoy. Where it'll just give you some twists, like Dorian Gray and the American in the show, played by Josh Harnett, are listening to some music together, and you think one of them is trying to sort of out the other as playing a role as sort of a dummy that he's not really. Mm-hmm. Then it turns out they're just going to start kissing and making out.
Yeah, they are.
Time out. Wow. I'm several episodes behind. Uh-huh. I will not be several episodes behind by the end of this day.
No.
Okay.
I tried to tell you. I tweeted, I can't tell you why you need to watch episode 4 of Penny Dreadful, but you do, and that's what happens in the very,
now I
the
know
very
why.
Last minute. Some gay stuff.
You guys, I gotta go. This was really nice. Thank you for having me, but I really, look at the time. Oh my God. I really, bye.
Bye, Joe.
As I said, my criticism of the show from the first episode stands to it. I just wish the show had sort of a sense of humor about itself. I think that's the missing element. It's not good enough to take itself totally seriously. Mm-hmm. And the premise is silly enough that to inject some humor into it would do it well. Not zaniness. I'm not talking American Horror Story, wackiness with Stevie Nicks appearing or something like that.
Right.
I just mean like a little
a Benny
wink
Hill
now
chase
and then.
Here or there.
I mean,
Benny Hill chase is
or like Sleepy Hollow realizing that Ichabod Crane.
Maybe not Yakety Sax crazy. Maybe just maybe just boing.
I think Frankenstein Monster and his job as like a curtain puller in the theater is little bit of a joke.
Yeah, but I feel like it's played. No, it's not played that way. I just wish it was a little winky. That's all. I think it would benefit from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like it too. So I've been trying to get Sarah on board with it because I think she would especially enjoy it. I think it would, especially since Turn was such a bummer for you, Sarah. I think this would be a better like supernatural costume. I mean, Turn wasn't supernatural at all. Maybe that was the problem. But it would supernaturally boring. But it would. I think it would. It would scratch your Sleepy Hollow itch. In ways you would find enjoyable.
Yeah, and it's beautifully shot.
It looks really great. Yeah,
And I think the actors are all actually really good in it. I tend to give Ava Green a wide berth for her sort of weirdness,
but it leans into her weirdness. I mean, it gives her a reason to be that weird.
Yeah,
was she in the first? Daniel Craig Bond.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, she was.
Okay, she's I was the friend. One who liked her. So
yeah, I like her, and the guy who plays Dr. Frankenstein is really good, and sort of really got me on board with him from like a very early stage in those first few scenes with him in the first episode.
And I'm a big fan of Timothy Dalton's work. I always feel like he got a raw deal on the Bond thing. And
he's a great scenery chewer. He's an unexpectedly great scenery chewer.
I would also just back to Dr. Frankenstein for a second. He was discussed by us in the first iteration of this podcast when we forced, or Dave forced Joe to watch Attack the Block. He was like the male lead of that movie.
Oh, is that him?
Yes, I told you that.
I know.
You son of a bitch. I hate you so much.
Yeah, no, you don't. Jeez. You love me. So it'll scratch a summer viewing itch. Are we going to go?
It's just so different from everything else that's on, too, that's refreshing. I mean, especially in the summer months, if you don't have AC, it might make you feel cold to watch Belfast standing in for Victorian
London. The other thing about the show is it seems to be comfortable setting up sort of a giant spread. Like, they're only in the fifth episode. I don't think it's aired yet.
Yes, it has.
It has? Okay. So the fifth episode is like this. It's all flashback. Yeah. And it's all just like one character thing. And for a fifth episode of a show, that's...
It's pretty daring.
Yeah.
And Dave's girlfriend, Anna Chancellor, shows up.
That's right.
She plays Eva Green's mom.
Yeah. So, you know, it does take some chances. It is well shot. And it is novel.
There are butts
and nudity. Guys, I don't want to get anybody too excited.
And gay stuff.
There is gay stuff. There, we saw the character of, was it Ren? What's his name?
Ren. Well, they call him something else, but it's
fair.
Renfield.
Renfield's in it. So I'm just saying, Dracula, NBC Dracula is gone, but who knows? We may be seeing a little Dracula on the Betty Dreadful.
Well, I mean.
I have to call my agent and find out.
Yes.
Look, guys. I'm not saying that every week you should have a mini where Dracula reviews the past week's Penny Dreadful. I'm just saying that sometimes suggestions for the suggestion box are good, and that is mine.
All right.
Now, Penny Dreadful spoilers! I've ended! Blah! Should we go all positive and then all...
Yeah, let's do that.
So let me throw it to Joe.
Okay, so mine is, I'm not really going to stretch too far. I'm going to say that my best summer show is Orange is the New Black, which I am currently in the thick of. I just finished episode 10. The way we talk about this show is still, to me, somewhat of a challenge because it only premiered, I guess is the word, last Friday. And because of work concerns, I binged through the first 6 episodes at work on Friday, and I've been working my way through the season since. I think there was sort of collectively a bit of a worry that because this is like, it's Jenji Kohan, and like Weeds sort of left a bad taste in people's mouths from like starting out good and then getting worse as it went along. I think that's also a lot of every show,
by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, that's the thing. And especially as shows that go on as long as that one did.
Yeah.
But I think people were sort of collectively very wary that this was going to not live up to the promise of the first season. And I think it has. And I'm going to have to wait till the end of the season to maybe say whether it's better than the first season. But I really think it's expanded the universe. I really am happy that it has... Except for Piper and a little bit of Red, it's been all new flashbacks. Like, nobody who had a flashback last season got a flashback this season thus far. It's all characters who you really loved in the first season and wanted to see more of, but didn't really know what their stories were. So you got Tasty, and you got Crazy Eyes, and you got Poussey, who's my favorite. Oh my God. So it's been really, really, I think it's really taken advantage of a very strong ensemble. I know on Twitter, Todd Vanderwerf mentioned Deadwood in relation to it. Being able to have this super wide canvas of characters that you care about almost all of them. And that's really rare. And even like the guards and the administration who could really were sort of flirting with caricature and like dastardliness in the first season, with the exception of Pornstash, they've all been fairly well deepened in the second season. I've been loving
Pornstash
it.
Pornstash has a, you know, grill full of scenery from the SVU set. So
yeah, well, and he...
I blame him too much for whatever's going on.
He came back for second helpings in this very first scene when he comes back to this, so...
Jesus.
Yeah.
Read the scripts first, bruh.
Am I the only one who's started yet, or...
We watched
episode four last night.
Yeah. Yeah, we're sort of a... Because we have the luxury of assigning other people to cover it, we're not having to bulldoze our way through the season like we did the first time around,
it's nice to savor it. It makes it a nice treat. Like, that we could watch another episode of Orange is the New Black.
I'm bored the whole season, you know, fully formed from the forehead of Zeus kind of idea. Mm-hmm. But when you have to work in that environment, I mean, not to get too inside baseball, but when you have to cover it, it's difficult. I don't think anybody's really cracked that nut, because it's really like people like are all over the map as far as where they've watched it and how they want to talk about it. And to cover it in a meaningful way when you're spending real money on it, it's hard because like, do I cover episode 7 now when I think only 20% of the people, and are they going to come back to it if I do one a week? The answer to all that is no, they don't. Like, either you happen to catch them when they watch it and you luck out, but it's really hard to cover this show. And I remember when Arrested Development came out, the Netflix season, like it was just sort of, I mean, granted it wasn't the best season of that show, but it was just sort of like, as far as press goes, it just sort of like, it was this tiny little blip. And I felt like the first season of Orange is the New Black got a longer coverage window, but not like I don't feel like it got as much coverage as the show was good. You know what I mean?
No, I know. Yeah. And talking about it socially, either in person or like on social media, has become this sort of, it's like you're looking for a drug dealer.
Where are you?
And you're just sort of just like, episode 5, can we talk about like 3? And then you just sort of like sneak off into a corner and like discuss it all on your own.
And
because
episode or House of Cards was the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, adult diaper, gorp, we're fucking doing this.
We did too.
Well, that was my truthful title card for House of Cards, which was just called, what episode of House of Cards are you on? Because that's really the dialogue you have to have.
Did you get to the one with the Meacham thing?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah, that was the question that you were asking, like, Meach around? Who had the tweet with Meach around?
Well, I retweeted it from someone else, but Bo Williman was at the ATX festival this weekend, and at the panel, he referred to that moment as the Meach around. That's pretty good.
Brilliant.
That's your like shibboleth. You're just sort of like, what's the code word? And then you know that they're in.
I also like Meach some.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just wish there was some sort of way to do it, but I mean, it's just going to be one of those things where we just have to, you know, live with it, and that's fine because as a consumer, I love having them there at my pace, and sometimes, you know, you want to watch them all at once.
But yes,
and
I know what
you
mean. It takes away the collective experience.
It does.
Watching a show.
Yeah. So Tara.
My respectable show has not actually premiered yet, but it is Masters of Sex. Very excited for season 2. I loved season 1. I'm excited that they decided to premiere something that's so prestige-y in the summer. It doesn't really feel like a summer show.
Yeah.
But there's not really much more to say about it. I think I commented on it at various points during the season on this podcast, but I'm very interested to see where these relationships go. I hope that Mom hasn't taken up too much of Alice and Janney's time so that she can come back, because she was one of my favorite characters. But
no, I haven't watched.
Yes,
but so who plays He-Man? And he holds up the giant dildo and he says, "I have the pot." No,
correct.
That's right.
That's correct.
See, we watched. What was it? What's it called?
Metastasis.
Metastasis. On Univision.
Someone on Twitter, I regret, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but asked if we were going to cover it, and I thought that meant that they knew something about, like, that it was going to be subtitled in English. This is the Colombian Breaking Bad remake.
Oh,
it was not. But it took like 3 minutes of the, because the, there's no dialogue in the first 3 minutes of the pilot. So we didn't know for that whole time if there were going to be subtitles, and then there weren't, but Dave had a
Walter Blanco.
Oh, yeah. Lo siento.
Heisenberg with a J. Apparently it was a screen grab that someone posted.
And they really mix it up because he doesn't have an RV. He has an old bus.
Yeah. Escolar.
Yeah. But it was different because in the pilot of this one, there was a whole bunch of dead people in the RV to start.
Aren't there in the original Breaking Bad pilot?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
Well, they started a little bit of a flash forward.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, the same thing, but.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe I'm just remembering.
They show him throwing his
pants. Yeah, you start with pants and I think those dudes, two ghost dudes, end up dead, right?
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Anyway.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
We're off topic, but there's not much more to say about Masters of Sex other than that I'm excited to see it. And I believe if you have Showtime on demand, you can watch all of season one and you should, because it was great.
Have we heard of cast additions for the second season?
I know Sarah Silverman is guesting on it, but I'm not sure if she's going to be in every episode. I'm sure.
I think
there
Sarah Silverman's
more,
just basically, what can
sure.
I show my boobs at now?
What,
she seems she
what?
Seems to reach that. Well, that's her now that she's broken that barrier for herself.
Right.
She's now, the Tara Reid of 2014.
Ooh.
I don't ouch. Know. That's uncalled for.
Yeah.
It must be hard for a show like Masters of Sex to cast actresses who have big naturals, though, because that was the age she does by her own description.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
Sarah.
Okay, well, there's
Speaking
no
Speaking of
segue.
Big naturals.
Yeah. I was going to say, Big Naturals is the best trivia team name I've ever heard, by the way.
Yay!
That's bullshit. So about prison, my predicted high is Rectify, which also is not back yet, a couple weeks. I'm very excited for the second season of this, and I hope that... I think people who watched and got into it last year are sort of have very high expectations of what's going to happen in the second season. I'm pretty confident because it was it was a short debut. It was six episodes, but it was very assured. It had its own pace and like took its time doing what it wanted to do. And my favorite part of it is that like I'm not convinced that most of the season was not a dream sequence a la Jacob's Ladder, which, I mean, are we going to put a spoiler warning on that? Because it's 20 years old.
No. Nope.
Whatever. he's dying. It's an Ambrose Bierce, like neuron flash at the end of his life. The whole movie is him dying. And I wonder if this isn't his...
Death row.
Yeah, what he's thinking about as he walks to the chair. But even if it's not, like the acting is amazing. J. Smith Cameron is great. The lead guy is great. Of course, I've forgotten his name. That's how great he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very excited for it to come back, and I'm very interested to see what they do, because the first season took place over the course of like a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah. It was a very short length of time, yeah.
Yeah, so they still have a lot. They still have a lot they can explore. They really didn't address, like, the show is very cagey about whether or not he actually did what he was accused of. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was let out because he didn't get a fair trial, I think, but or evidence was compromised. But the show hasn't really taken a position on whether or not he actually killed this girl.
If you don't know, it's the story of a guy who's been on death row for decades and is exonerated very belatedly and gets out, and so it's about him reintegrating in with his family, which has obviously changed a lot since he's been gone, and the ongoing fight to, you know, maintain his innocence and stuff. And if you haven't seen season one, it's so good, and it's all you can stream it on Netflix, and you should, because it's amazing.
Yeah, and he's... To clarify, he isn't actually exonerated.
Oh,
he's
I'm sorry,
released.
You're right. Right.
So that's, I mean, I thought that was a really cool take on it, that the show sometimes implies that it's possible that he could have done it and that there's maybe something not quite psychonormative about him, that there's something a little off. And does that mean that he committed this crime? Anyway, I've been drumming my fingers waiting for this to come back for like a year. So yay, Rectify.
All right, so now let's move on to the lows. I will admit I sort of screwed up my pick. I just realized we were supposed to pick a beloved low, not a low, but let's just roll with it. Mm-hmm. So everybody else has probably got the right picks. I'm just going to give you straight up garbage, not beloved garbage, and that is the AMC attempt to recapture some sort of nostalgic hit, and that is Halt and Catch Fire, the Texan computer show. Premise, interesting to me. I sort of grew up using computers while these people were building these computers. You know, my first computer was sort of a VIC-20, so I'm sort of like that. I'm that old. And I was in for it, and man, is this show boring. Wow.
It's so boring.
Nothing happens
on this
show.
Here's what I do like about this show. The many variations on boring that you can fit into the name.
Oh, my
Dolt
God.
And Catch Fire.
Oh, God.
Halt and Catch Bore.
Yeah.
Halt and Catch some Z's, as Dave rendered it in the doc.
Yeah.
That is the show's great gift and only gift.
And it is just like, the show is about people coding and people doing administrative paperwork to get around legal issues. Like,
yeah,
there
if you
is
wanted
nothing
to hear
going.
The phrase BIOS code 700 times, I really recommend episode 2.
And a lot of whiteboards with hex codes on them.
That you can't, no one can understand.
And
like,
by
I
the way, nobody's using
who...
whiteboards in the 80s.
Not in 1983.
They existed, but they weren't popular use. Nobody would have them in that place. They'd be chalkboards.
Anyway, but we were like three quarters of the way through because I put it on the calendar, on our editorial calendar, to write something about it. And I was under the impression that we were going to get screeners of it, and then we didn't.
Now we
and
know
then,
why.
And then, yeah, because they put up episode one early for people to sample, which apparently no one did because the ratings for episode one were T-E-arable. Right. And no one is going who was like, oh, maybe. Because after the first one, I was like, I don't really know who this show is for, but I'm kind of intrigued by it. And then episode two is like, I don't even know what I would write about this because I'm so bored.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it was a lot of wrangling. And they even had a brief, could have been a makeover sequence, and then they didn't even commit to that. So it's like, there's nothing here for me.
No.
Yeah, I think Tara had to do a shot of espresso just to IM me and be like, this is too boring for me to write about.
Yeah.
So, like, nominally, like, what is the conflict?
So the idea is that there's this dude. He's supposed to be the Don Draper-y kind of character,
that's
right?
Lee Pace.
And he is some sort of ne'er-do-well that sort of seems to be skipping businesses and ruining them, and he comes to this Cardiff Electronics.
Well, it seemed like in the second episode, like, his dad might be some kind of muckety-mucket IBM.
But basically,
they referred to him.
He gets people to reverse engineer a computer, and that gets IBM suing the company that he's now working at. And basically, he forces his company's hand to complete the process
of building
bringing
an IBM
a computer
clone
to market to save the company itself because he brought in IBM's wrath on them. All right. So that is the force of the show. And then there are, hey, what's going on back there? Hey, wake up. And then, like, there's all these characters that are helping build that. And there's a lot of binders of printouts of codes and stuff. And it's just like, it's an interesting era, but it is not interesting drama. Like, I would like to read a magazine article about it. The only really good thing about this show is the opening credits are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. Like, just seek them out on YouTube. They're like kind of like all you'll want to do the robot as you're listening to them. They're really great. But yeah, the show's kind of a stinker, guys.
Is it something that like could work as a movie even? Like, if you just sort of like concentrated it and like really sort of made it period specific?
I mean, I think the closest thing's probably like the
Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that or the Facebook movie, you know, like something like that. I know you guys didn't like it. I didn't see it. But I mean, this that sort of thing is just sort of like,
but the difference between either of those and this is that those were stories of real things that actually happened involving real people. Like, this is all fictional. So as I wrote in my first post on the show, part of the problem for me is like the imaginative leap of like, well, I know this isn't a real company. Like, none of this really happened. I have no investment in whether this, you know, if this is really the story of Compaq or something,
right,
which they refer to, so it's not, but
right,
I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. It's hard to care when you know you can't go to Best Buy and buy like a Cardiff Electric laptop because you can't. It's not a real company.
Yeah. So if you were thinking about watching it, I would say give it a pass.
Yeah, don't. Ugh. Yeah.
All right. Joe?
Okay. So this is sort of a struggle for me. I don't give things up easily.
Uh-oh.
I've stuck with a garbage show like Big Brother for literally 194 years. Like, I am the oldest living person because I've been watching Big Brother,
Moon
and I won't give
pies.
It up. I had also watched every single season of The Real World, and The Real World broke me this year, but I feel like The Real World...
Back up. That's a hot scoop.
I know. Well,
Joe Reed gave up on The Real World? Are you still watching The Challenge?
Oh, I'm still watching The Challenge. Okay. I'm ride or die for The Challenge. I feel like The Real World gave up on me, is what I'm going to say. Aww. The Real World went and changed. I didn't change. Yeah. Like, yeah. The Real World sort of fucked up its formatting so bad and basically became a different show. Not even just sort of like, well, now it's just seven strangers and all their exes. Like,
well, but it tried to be The Challenge, and then ironically.
And even just the way it filmed, like, it looked different. It looked cheaper. It looked incredibly cheap.
It did look
cheaper.
Cheap.
Which is like, it's not not a non-cheap looking show to begin with. Like, yeah, how to make it look more cheap.
It was almost like, how did they do that?
Yeah.
Like, it's straight to, like, from actual tape.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Big Brother is a show that I used to enjoy more than I have in the last several seasons. The last several seasons have sort of devolved into, I got really into it for a good, like, month and a half, and then I really sort of, like, fell off by the end. Nobody really remembers that this show, like, goes into September.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it really, really drifts, like, long, 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 and you're just like, but there's preseason football on. Like, what's happening? So, like, last season, as I like to call the racist season, because holy shit, it was...
Oh, yeah,
so
right.
So racist. So racist that the show had to acknowledge how racist it was. So racist that, like, the racism played into, like, the eliminations. Like, it actually, like, racism became a text in the show. It was really, really, really bad. While I sort of would, like, check in every once in a while and see, like, how's that racist doing? Did that racist get their comeuppance? What's up with Blondie? Like, and then ultimately, like, the least offensive gay guy ever, like, won somehow. So, whatever. And I think he was also a little racist. And, like, he was, like, at the end, like, hugging these girls who called him, like, faggoty Andy and shit like that. Not even making that up. That is what they called him. So it was, like, it was the worst. And I really, really think I may not go back. Even though I'm going to say that now, and now that's on the record, so that when I do end up going back, you can all call me on it and call me a horrible hypocrite.
I have a solution for you, Joe.
Yes.
I understand that Canada has a Big Brother, and you know that the Canadian Big Brother people are going to be very polite and not racist. So if you want to remove the racist component from Big Brother, maybe you want to check it out.
Maybe I'll track that down.
I did see a couple of episodes while I was in Canada, and it appeared that there was not just a Muslim character, but multiple Muslim characters, or at least, like, Middle Eastern,
whoa,
people of Middle Eastern descent.
Right.
That's not legal in the United States. That's really, you have to, like, Canada's breaking all the rules.
They
That's
have
amazing.
The two on The Amazing Race, and then that's okay. It. They've occupied those slots for all of American reality television.
American TV, you've hit your quota.
But
good job.
Are you curious at all as to whether CBS has not just corrected this issue with, like, maybe more careful casting and background checks of the potential contestants this season, but have they maybe overcorrected to the point where it's going to be boring?
This is why I'm going to end up being curious, at least in the first few weeks, to see what it is. I mean, they've had bad people before, but, like, the PR was really bad for them last summer, and they've usually been pretty Teflon about it, and last year they were not.
And so, even Julie Chen was giving interviews about it where she was like, yeah, I'm not cool with this. Like,
right.
I have to think that part of this her going to someone, maybe her husband, I understand.
Yeah.
He's somewhat powerful at CBS, being like,
right,
could you maybe not get clan members for me to pretend to have to like on this show? Thanks.
That was the best, the one good part of
that
season last year,
for.
Is when, like, people would get eliminated and you were like, oh, this one's especially racist. And they would, like, walk out into, like, the interview area and Julie Chen would be sitting there like Michelle Visage at the Drag Race table with, like, her arms crossed and just be like, so, care to explain yourself? And it's the most I've ever liked Julie Chen, and I'm generally fairly pro Julie Chen, so that's saying something. But,
yeah,
like, yeah, that was fun.
Sarah?
My guilty pleasure TV show, I guess, or summer TV show, is Witches of East End.
Nice.
Which I actually forgot was backed up on my DVR from December until recently. I just found them and was like, oh, yeah. So I'm like just swooping straight from, like, I managed to sort of bond the two seasons so that I'm watching the end of the December season, and then season two starts in a few weeks. Basically, it's witches with beautiful hair extensions,
so
living
beautiful,
in the Hamptons or Connecticut or somewhere. And it's practical magic, but the TV show, and it's, you know, it's not perfect, but Madchen Amick has been waiting for this role her whole life. She is
what a trooper that one is.
Favorite thing on the show. I mean, she was on Dawson's, for Christ's sake.
She was on Gilmore Girls, I think.
She was on Sleepwalkers. She was on what?
Sleepwalkers.
I heard Sleepfuckers. I was like,
she's probably in that too. She had a very dark period in her career where she had to go around sleepwalking and fucking guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that movie. James Spader was in it. 93. Joe, back me up. Yeah, it's fun. Like, you don't have to pay close attention to it. Like, there's a shapeshifter or there's not. Virginia Madsen's evil because she's just a bitch, or she's evil because she's, like, a bad witch who was shapeshifted. Doesn't matter. It's going to be different in the next episode. Ingrid will, like, be in the library looking up books and making eyes at the cute cop from town. Who she'll then reanimate as a zombie, maybe, and keep him in her bedroom. Speaking of sleep fuckers, got pretty intense on the Lifetime Network at 10 o'clock, I'm just saying. Yeah, it's fun. You don't have to pay too close attention to it. And it's like witch TV for people who don't like witch TV, which is totally me.
Yeah, it's cute. I like it too.
Let me ask you a question. How good are these witches at creating computers from other computers?
And follow up.
N.A.
How would these witches do against the witches of Salem?
Oh.
Wait, in a land competition using their computers.
I think the witches of Salem would be very confused.
I think the game they would be playing would be Doom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. Or Risk. Yes. Right.
The Salem is a lot more bonkers than Witches of East End. Salem is more to like the Scandal end of the TV spectrum.
All right.
Witches of East End is something where, like, if you watched it with your mom, it would be okay. No one is coughing up a frog and then nursing it on a nipple on their naked inner thigh, as happens on Salem.
Time out. Okay. Yet. Now I've got two shows I've got to catch up on.
Here's the thing, though. If you are a person, and I know you people are out there, and it is okay, who struggle with Julia Ormond's various accent things.
Yep.
This is not a show for you.
Trigger warning, Julia Ormond's accent.
She sounds like she has Katharine Hepburn stuck in her throat.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't mind this. Other people can't take it. If you can't take it, don't watch this show. But if you enjoy long strawberry blonde hair extensions, you are in for all the treats.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
And that's mine.
Mine is another one that has not premiered yet, but that I'm quite excited for. It's on the E! Network. It is a reality program. It is called Botched.
Whoa.
It's about botched plastic surgery, guys. There's no way I would not be watching this show. It was made for me.
How do they get releases for that?
This hits your every button, doesn't it?
I want to see the show about the people that had to convince them to get the releases for
I assume it's about people getting their shit fixed, so that it's probably either the show pays for it or it's about their journey,
right?
You
right
know?
Yeah,
but still, there's going to be before shots of people's fucked up boobs.
Sure,
that's what I'm in for. Like, right. Embarrassing Bodies hasn't been on BBC America in a donkey.
You put
age.
It on my shoulder.
That is a trivia team name.
Embarrassing
before
Bodies
shots of people's fucked up boobs. Don't touch it. It's mine.
Yeah. So
that botched, is what they've said on the show as well.
Look out for that on the good old E! Network.
Good old E!
Yep.
You garbage network.
Yep.
All right, we're covering a lot of TV show ground today. Let's go around the dial, and Tara, we're going to let you go first.
I actually have two. I had a late addition, but ooh. So first, let's talk about the Veep finale. Fucking so Veep, good. It's so good.
Yeah,
so good,
so good.
Jonah and his mom,
and
his
the
portrait.
The painting of Jonah in his high school fucking polo shirt.
Oh God,
it's perfect. I'm very interested in the corner that they've kind of painted themselves into with this plot line. If you haven't seen it,
oh, do you want me to?
Nah, it aired on Sunday. People aren't going to hear this until Tuesday or Wednesday.
You knew what you were getting into, people.
Yeah, this is not a spoiler, but what happens at the it was a two part finale. At the end of part one, Selena finds out that the president is going to resign before his term is over because of his wife's problems. And then, so Dave was like, well, that could, didn't, Dave didn't realize there was still another episode left, because I was like, well, I guess this is happening, because I thought, like, you know, if that could have been a pretty good cliffhanger for if that had, if that had
been
the season
finale. I assume
that
was the case, yeah.
Because then it's like, well, what's going to happen to make this fall apart?
Yeah.
Right.
For him to change his mind or whatever.
Yeah.
But then he really does, and she really takes the oath of office twice. And she gets sworn in, but then it's still the campaign, and she comes in third in the New Hampshire primary. So it's like, how is this going to resolve itself?
Yeah, how long will she actually be president for?
Right. And then I thought, I was thinking, like, you know, people on the boards have various theories about it. Like, you know, maybe one of the other candidates wins the nomination, and then she ends up being their running mate.
So it'll stay Veep. So ways for it to stay Veep.
But then I thought another way it could be. It could end up, I mean, not that I want any show to not have Julia Louis-Dreyfus in it, because she's fucking incredible, but it could end up being about her Veep or whoever the next Veep is. Like, presumably it could totally change.
Law and Order it up.
Because that's how they did it on The Thick of It, where it would be like, it would be different politicians after a while.
Yeah.
That would actually be a really good idea.
I mean, I can't see it happening on an American show.
No.
It would be very weird for them to ER it, you know?
Yeah.
But it could happen. I mean, the general consensus on our bulletin boards, which you should visit,
bulletin
lots
boards.
Lots of smart people. Whatever.
Check us out on FidoNet.
On the forums. Fuck, whatever. Why are you antagonizing me today? Say.
Hello, lawsuit.
Oh, God.
Yeah, anyways.
You are exhausted.
There it is. Thank you.
Did I tell you guys Reed Scott favorited a tweet of mine last week?
No, but that's amazing.
I tweeted at, because the previous week's episode, when Dan comes back from his psychiatric furlough.
Yeah, yes.
With the beard. And so I tweeted just like, maybe in all caps, maybe not. I was just like, Dan Egan's beard. Like, you guys, it was a moment. I had to have a couple of moments. And so, like, literally, like, 2 days later, all of a sudden I see, like, Reed Scott has favorited your tweet. And it was that tweet. So I was very happy.
Nice. Yeah, Timothy Simon's tweet and the Veep account both either faved or retweeted my post about Jonah's closing monologue in the episode with Dan's breakdown with this whole thing.
Oh, God.
Tiny boy balls.
Forum theory.
Oh, yeah. Everyone seems to think, because we know it's coming back for one more season, but that next season will probably be the end.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
But we have no way of knowing that.
Right, sure.
I mean, I'm sure HBO wants to ride its award pony into the ground, but with Armando Iannucci behind it, maybe they won't be able to do that. Speaking of award ponies, fucking Louis.
Wait, was that the theory?
What? Fucking Louis?
No, was that the forum?
The forum theory was just that next season is going to be the end.
It'll end
with her losing the campaign, and that'll be the end of the
show.
Got
it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Louis.
Here we go.
Holy shit. It's been so self-indulgent. last night's episode, as we're recording this on Tuesday, it was an hour and a half. It was all one story. It had nothing to do with the episode before it, which, whatever, that's his right, I suppose. But an hour and a half is a long time for what is supposed to be a situation comedy to impose itself on me and my busy TV schedule when Orange is the New Black just came back 4 days earlier. And it was all about fucking Louis. Not even him. It was like adolescent Louis. His pursuit of weed as a kid. Like, the only thing more boring than people actually doing that is watching fictional people do that. And Jeremy Renner shows up for no reason as a dealer. It was like,
To be mean to you, basically, right? Like,
thank
that
you.
Felt antagonistic just to you.
It was a personal fuck you to me. That is how I felt. And I feel like you're not supposed to say that Louis is boring, but it's really been boring this season when it hasn't been outright offensive, frankly.
I was going to say, aside from the rape scenes, it's
aside
been
from
very
the rape
boring.
Scenes with multiple ladies, P.S. And, you know, the theory is that they're going somewhere where that's going to resolve, and it's going to be like, well, there's been a reason why he's been exploring this idea. I hope that's true. I mean, I will watch the last two episodes of the season because I have to see how the Pamela story ends. But this In the Woods episode with all the drug stuff, like, after a half hour, I was like, it's enough. Like, how dare you, sir? At long last, have you no shame? It's basically how I felt about this episode.
The first episode of the season was so funny.
It was
too.
Really funny.
It both started off so two, good.
Both of those two first episodes were pretty funny, I thought. The model one was a little weird. But I don't... you're not supposed to say you don't like it, but I really don't like it.
This
I
is
don't
how
like
I
it
felt,
anymore.
Tara, this is how I felt for literally like 3 years.
Where it's I
like,
get
I'm
it.
Not
so,
I'm not supposed to say that I don't didn't like, you know, the first season, so I'm not watching it anymore. And like,
yeah.
So I'm just going to not talk about it. Like, that'll be how I do
I it. Always said about Louis that when he decides to do an episode that is funny, it really hits with me.
Yes.
And I find them quite funny.
Yes.
But then he, you know, he... And once in a while, serious episodes
well it,
do
it turns
strike
into
a
that,
chord
yeah
but there are ones where it's just like well I didn't yeah just like okay
yeah
I mean it's sort of like the established comedian's version of like you know high school poetry or something
yes oh god you're so right
you know like it's just yes. like I get it
yeah.
I can't not get what you're doing
right
I wish you were either funnier or more subtle or more nuanced when you do these sort of episodes.
Yes.
Because I feel like you're using your hammer over my head. And they're not, like, poorly made. They're just ill-conceived, I find, like, some of these episodes.
And there's a Sorkin top note
yes.
of self-satisfaction. Yes. Like, I'm the one who thought the whatever fat girl speech one was well-delivered by the actress.
Yeah.
But... Very preachy and not
well,
like
what's their,
first
was,
drafty. And it's like,
yeah.
people don't talk like this. This isn't telling me anything I didn't know. We're supposed to congratulate him for thinking that anybody above a size 6 is a human being.
Yeah.
There are sort of elements of Louis has written an essay for a magazine and they rejected it, so he put it in his show.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are, you know, and I feel like there's been way more of those things in the past season and even creeping into the season before that than 1 and 2.
Yep.
And I want Louis to entertain me.
Well, and it's not to say that like stand-up comics can't work stuff out, but it's like you work it out in your comedy. Like make jokes about it that are funny if you wanted to make a drama show.
And I don't begrudge a comedian for mixing it up. Like I kind of feel like Louis sometimes feels like he's trying to capture something about George Carlin, where George Carlin was able to do jokes but also very infuse it with a very unique position, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
he had like philosophies and was sort of a truth teller.
Right. But... I mean, George Carlin towards his end had a period where he was just sort of like quite angry with everything.
I was going to say, comparing Louis
that,
C.K. to George
Carlin. No, but
is
I mean,
No,
I'm not. I'm just saying that I feel like he's trying to capture something of that where he can be at once the comedian and the philosopher, but he's schizophrenic in that regards where he's either the comedian or the philosopher and never the two shall meet something. You know what I mean? That's the impression I get with the latest Louis season. Mm-hmm. And I wish either he would get better at melding them or leave the philosophy for, you know, go into his Patton Oswalt period where he does all these other things on the web where he spouts off all his diatribes and all his, you know, blah blah blahs, and
better
then
yet, don't.
Well, I was gonna say, don't get me started.
Well,
on that, that guy either, but
put
I understand what you're saying.
Put it in a container.
Yes.
Put it off his show.
Yes.
Give me the Louis I like. That's all. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, regardless, like as I said, I'll see how this storyline that he started ends up, which is next week, is the last two episodes of the season. But that's probably it for me.
I don't necessarily
need to see more of this.
Just to temper everything I've said, I will say the garbage scene in the first episode
was
is like in my top 10 things of 2014.
That's,
that was so good.
Yes.
And it was like really hit so much about like waking up, living in New York, being perturbed, how it feels. Like it was such a perfect scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, so, you know, he can be super awesome.
Yeah.
I just wish he would do it more often.
Yeah. I would also be curious to see the breakdown of like who has liked this season among critics, like men versus women.
Because
anecdotally, from what I see on Twitter, there's a lot of like men being like, it's so interesting. Mm. This Amiya storyline has been so lovely. And then women being like,
That, I mean, That's subject matter gross. Aside, that dragged on for a long. That was like
six, six episodes. Six episodes of a woman he could literally not have a conversation with.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay, let's
move on. All right,
move
moving on.
On,
sorry.
All right, Joe.
Okay, so I'm going to take guest privilege and talk about two things. One thing really, really quickly. I'm going through the entire series of The West Wing on my Tumblr. So if anybody wants to come by and read those and go crazy with me and sort of dig through the minute details of this series that I've probably watched through about three times already.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, joereed.tumblr.com. I had nothing else to do with that blog, so why not? Also, though, I wanted to report, because if nothing else, Extra Hot Great is the podcast that will tell you how to manage your home game nights. True. We had a game night, game afternoon, I guess, this past weekend with former show guest Adam Grossworth. He hosted. And we did some Hollywood game night games. So this is how I'm tying this into television. We did our level best to sort of adapt them the most sort of friendly to your home game as possible. The stuff that didn't need, let's say, giant blown up magazine covers or anything like that, or mashed together faces, which are not fun anyway, so whatever.
No, they haven't done that in ages, though.
So we did four games, and I'm going to give them to you in the order of how much fun they were. So the very first one, I think, is I've only seen played on Hollywood Game Night once, and it's the one with the blocks with the letters on them.
Oh, yeah, they
like
did
the children's blocks.
They did that again this week.
Nice.
It's in the latest episode as well.
It's super, super fun to play. If you're playing with a group, what we did is we split everybody into, we had like 12 people, so we split people into teams of three. Everybody writes down one category on a piece of paper and throws it in a bowl. And Adam bought a set of children's blocks Aww. For this because he's dedicated. And so you just sort of lay them out on the table and you pull the category. And then like each team like goes in order and like they have to, you know, grab a letter and name something from the category with that letter.
On the show, it's called Letter Habit.
It is called Letter Habit. The tip I'm going to give you for this game is set stringent time policies. Like, don't only time the round, but like time each turn. So like you get 4 seconds to grab a letter or you pass, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
To make it really, really like fast and intense. It's a lot of fun. That was sort of
so it's sort of like categories, but the letter changes on every pull.
It's you have the all of the letters of the alphabet in front of you.
Yeah.
So you can just like, so if you see D and it's like, you know, it's something that you know is a D, you grab it and you've got it.
And
so
the category is like top in the latest episode of the actual show, the category was top 50 fast food chains in America.
Oh, I see.
So you reach for W and you're like Wendy's, right. Etc.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We did How Do You Do, the thing where you sing the songs and go do, 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 do. That's another one. You just sort of like write down song titles, celebrity style, and throw them in a bowl.
Sure.
That's a good one if you want to yell at people for being like, I didn't know September was the title of that song. How could I possibly know? That kind of thing.
Yep.
I did a perfect, note-perfect version of Caribbean Queen, and nobody knew it, and I was so mad.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Do 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 do. Anyway, it was great. TVID is the one. Yeah. Okay. So TVID is the one where you bid. You look at a TV title. You and somebody else on the other team. See the TV title and you're like, I could name that in three words, or I could give clues to that in three words, that
kind
of thing.
You can't use any of the words in the title, obviously, but you also can't say any character or actor,
those taboo
actor name on the show.
Exactly. That is another one where tight time limits are good, because we sort of fell into the trap of people like really trying to work out the specific clues that they were going to give. And like, it took too much time, like set very, very tight time limits in terms of like the negotiating for the clues. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it's really good. Then the fourth one we did was Take the Hint, which it's three people on your team, stand next to each other and do like the one word clues. So if it's like 6 feet under, you would do like funeral and you would be next to me and you'd say home, and somebody next to me would be like California.
Fishers.
No, you would do, arm, and then
numb,
and then
you do numb,
narm.
Arm, narm. Yeah. Yes. Perfect. So those were the four we tried. Those were pretty raging successes, I would say.
Nice.
So, awesome. Yeah, I think I highly encourage people to adapt these at their own games and maybe get back to us and let us know how it went.
Okay. Breaking news from yesterday. Possible Clone High movie.
Yes.
The creators, which their names are, Tara?
Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
are sniffing around trying to see if it might be possible. Fingers crossed.
They've got as much clout as they've ever had, I will say that.
Oh, yeah, Lego Movie and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
And 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, 21 Jump Street.
Part of the problem is they have a deal set up at one company. Bill Lawrence, who's the executive producer of Clone High, has his deal set up somewhere else. And then I think a third company owns the actual rights to Clone High, so it's all...
And Canada's involved somehow.
Complex. Canada is involved somehow, yeah.
Yeah.
Snowflake Day.
Yeah. But they can make it happen. Win-win for everybody.
Yeah, that,
that show, so good. Mm-hmm. So good. All right. Sarah.
I also have two, because apparently that's what we're doing. I picked the letter T. My first one is Turn. I'm still mad. This show should have been so good. The Culper Ring, it's a great story. And think of all the stuff that they had to do to pass secret codes back when, like, once the sun went down, you were screwed.
Yeah.
Like, it's a Revolutionary War spy ring. How could you make this boring with basically a Dawson's Creek love triangle that briefly was a pentangle and was always boring and moist and Well, it was. And someone's going to turn up pregnant next season. I will not turn up at all for Turn season two because it's clear that they don't want it to be about spying. They want it to be about longing looks between Abe and Anna. I will be doing a list of other spy, famous like real life spy situations that I hope TV doesn't fuck up this week on previously.tv. Oh, nice. So look for that.
Would you advise that people turn away?
Yes.
Or turn back.
Turn down.
Or turn down. Or turn the channel to something
turn
else.
Turn down for what?
It's like Love in the Age of Colonies.
Don't turn back. The second T show, of course, is True Tory, which is wrapping up this week with the footage, whatever the shit they should have shown, special.
Yeah.
I'm sure it won't be anything we couldn't have lived without. But watching this show, both... for its own sake and the number of other people I'm finding who are watching the show and like have gotten sucked into it on this like anthropological study level.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we're all just telling each other, but it's not like, it's not quite interesting enough per se. There's also like the added layer of discussion with other people who may or may not be taking it with the same seriousness you are, or feel like it's as contrived as you do. And if you do think it's completely contrived, which I kind of do, I don't actually judge her for that. I think that's solid branding for her and her family. So it's been an interesting experience watching it and seeing, also just finding out how many other people I know are watching it and are not that ashamed of it.
Yeah, speaking of Shibboleth, like, my God, like, you're just sort of like around corner, like, you're watching True Tory.
And then they always are.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, True Tory, Tara, was it you who was saying that you hoped that they were dragging out this, like, first the reunion and then the deleted scene so that they would immediately start another season right after that?
Yes. That does not seem to be true, at least judging by the digital guide, but it still could happen. I mean, it seemed like they were turning episode, like, the show started in May, right? Or April?
Mm-hmm.
And it, and they were like, and now it's Easter. Like, it was really, episodes were coming on the air seemingly like just a couple of weeks after they were shot. So they were turning it around very quickly. And this way they could have, you know, episodes that are about the reaction to the first season's worth of episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them, but yeah, I definitely hope there's at least another
season.
The
True Tory Mobius is formed.
Exactly.
Okay, it's time for the canon. And Joe, what do you got for us?
I have come to you with a series that is a little bit topical. It's The Comeback, HBO's The Comeback, starring Lisa Kudrow, which is going to be returning for somewhat of a miracle second season. They're filming that now, I believe. So we can all cross our fingers about that. But for now, I am presenting season one, season only, episode 8, Valerie Relaxes in Palm Springs. So, The Comeback was a one-season wonder cult hit from 2005, post-Friends Lisa Kudrow, who also always seemed like she was destined to go darker than Friends was ever going to allow her. She was in The Opposite of Sex and Happy Endings, the movie, not the series. The premise is Lisa Kudrow plays this woman named Valerie Cherish, who's a middle-aged actress who used to be fairly notable. She was in this sitcom called I'm It that we don't really know a ton about, except she just sort of like talks about it. It just seems like a very standard 80s three-camera, dumb office sitcom, maybe? I don't know.
Seem to recall, I think she plays a lawyer. I think there's a moment where we get to see a clip from it.
Oh, right.
And
she
has a love interest, is about to declare himself or something, and she stops him by closing his tie in a filing cabinet drawer. If I recall correctly, I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm not, but that gives you an idea of, like, it's like a sub just shoot me type of affair.
The best part of I'm It is that there's an exclamation point at the end of it. So whenever you see like the posters from it or whatever, I'm it. And she refers to it as it, which
thank
is my
you.
Favorite
I was
thing.
Just about to say.
It's so great. It's when I was on it. She's fairly well washed up now. We see in the first episode, she's sort of up for this role against people like Mary Lou Henner and Kim Fields, both cameoing as themselves. So you sort of see like the genre of actress that she was in. So she's gets cast on this sort of dumb, horny 20-something sitcom called Room and Board, B-O-R-E-D, where she plays Aunt Sassy, like the tracksuit-wearing, frumpy old lady. And in conjunction with this, she has to film this reality series called The Comeback, which is going to promote the show. And Val hopes, like, return her to prominence, because reality is in that so hot right now, mid-2000s stage. And so the reality show within the show is called The Comeback. This episode is right around the middle of the season. It's a break from what we would normally be getting on the show, which is Val filming the series or promoting the series and dealing with her cast members. Malin Ackerman and Kellen Lutz were two of her cast members. And then the writers, particularly Polly G, one of the two co-showrunners, who absolutely hates her and sort of seeks to embarrass her and humiliate her at every turn. So the show's future at this point in the series is in question. The sitcom's future is in question. So Val decides to take a weekend away in Palm Springs. Her husband, Marky Mark, has always bristled at the reality show cameras in their lives. So you can imagine how he feels when his vacation is not only subject to Jane and her reality crew, but also a product placed Lincoln, complete with a little shit corporate representative tagging along and keeps like sort of popping up and telling him, you know, say the car's name when you talk about how great it handles or whatever.
By the way, the guy who tried to date rape Kelly Taylor at a Halloween party on Beverly Hills 90210.
No, shut up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yes.
Okay. So first clip.
This car handles real well.
Could you say the navigator handles real well?
Sorry.
When you say something about the car, could you mention the name? Like, the Navigator has comfortable seats, or the Navigator has individual seat warming or cooling controls?
Yeah, okay. The Navigator... I forgot what I said.
This Navigator handles real well. There, done.
So that's the dynamics, is Mark trying to keep his dignity, whatever's left of it, and Val sort of very gladly, overly anxiously playing into the tropes of the reality show, because this is what she has left. This is how she's going to get famous again. Once they're at the resort in Palm Springs, nothing really goes right. We see a series of sort of disasters and disappointments, partially owing to Valerie being a nightmare who can't be comfortable in her own skin, at least when the cameras are on her, which is always. And partially owing to other people being awful. There's that that terrible blonde at the pool who's hogging four deck chairs for three people who are not there.
And the best part of that scene is when she just sort of, after she explains that she can move her iPod, she just wants one seat, and she's
yeah.
And then Valerie explains she needs two. She just sort of smiles at her, and her hand just sort of drifts back with the iPod, puts it back on the seat. It's a really great visual moment.
It's the girl Terrible. Who played Jan in the Brady Bunch movies.
Yes,
and she also
she has a very Tara Reid quality to her.
She does. She is obviously a favorite of Lisa Kudrow and Dan Pukutinski too, because they brought her back for a pretty big role on Web Therapy.
Oh, okay, cool.
Continue.
No, thanks. Val also screws up Mark's round of golf by sort of playing to the cameras and being an asshole. And he kind of drives on the cart away from her. Or he walks off and he leaves her for the cart to drive away. And she's, of course, sort of playing up to the cameras. And everything's fine and everything's great. And she sort of tries to make a joke, because she's trying to be this sort of brassy, funny lady that she might be, but like Lord knows it's never in front of these reality cameras, so we would never know. The kind of woman she actually probably wants to be is like this woman, Donna, who Donna and Don are friends of theirs, who Mark invites to join them for dinner because they're in Palm Springs as well. And Donna is brassy and frank and sort of tells it like it is and is funny. And as a cancer survivor, which Val didn't know because she didn't read the Christmas card. And even Donna at that point is like, who reads those things if it's not about you? I don't give a fuck. Like that kind of thing. So she's kind of great, and Val is very both uncomfortable around her and embarrassed by her and sort of keeps looking to the cameras like, we barely know them. So ultimately, the next day, I believe, they're out by the pool sort of sunning themselves, and Donna has seen enough of Valerie to sort of feel like she can make a comment on how she's behaving in front of the cameras.
Valerie, we don't know each other very well, but... can I say something?
Sure.
You have to stop worrying so much about what people think.
Okay.
Like that. You keep looking at the camera, trying to control how this is all coming across.
Oh, I'm not trying to control.
You can't control life, Val. Hell, you can't even control what chair you get by the pool. Who cares what people think? Gotta love yourself. Warts and all.
Donna takes her bikini top off.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Donna gone wild. Spring break. So probably have to go into town to get that footage, right? Otherwise, when will we?
So Val like hightails it out of there, like drags her mic pack behind her, like can't get out of there fast enough. So she heads into town where she runs into, well, first of all, she points out the statue of Sonny Bono to a tourist. And then she runs into this pair of gay guys who, in a bit of rather prophetic meta commentary, actually sort of totally worship Val from her I'm It days. Just sort of, it's a great sort of pre-echo of how people would eventually accept the comeback and Lisa Kudrow in the comeback, because just like, find a gay guy, like mention the comeback, and then just sort of sit back and they'll talk about it for a while. So, and they're totally looking forward to room and board. And they're like, we love that tracksuit. And Val, who had been complaining about the tracksuit before, is just like, right, isn't it great? Like completely just sort of eats it up, knowing how great this will come across on camera. But when it comes time to sign the releases, the younger one of the two gay guys doesn't want to sign because he's not out to his parents yet and he doesn't want them to see on TV. So at which point Valerie launches into this speech, which is sort of semi-cribbed from what Donna had been telling her about being true to yourself.
It's horrible.
It's horrible, but it's amazing. It's like, it's really fascinating, actually, because like she's 100% motivated by self-interest. She's only doing this to get them to sign the release so that this scene that talks about how great she is will be on her show. And she's sort of like, it's somewhat unforgivable to treat these human beings as a means to an end. And yet... also, it's undeniably, like, good advice for this guy. Like, ultimately, like, at the end, he's like, you know what, you're right. And he sort of, he comes away feeling better about himself. So Valerie sort of stumbles ass backwards into being life-affirming, weirdly, which is the only way she could probably be life-affirming. It's an amazing scene. So that night, Val and Mark and Don and Donna go out to dinner again. And Val gets a call from Juna, Malin Ackerman, who is her co-star, who is at a party. We're at a cast and crew party. And she wonders why Val isn't there. And Val, of course, did not know about the party because Pauly G's throwing it. And he intentionally didn't invite her. And she makes an excuse. And Juna doesn't really catch on that this was an intentional slight, even though she's like, Pauly keeps joking that he didn't invite you on purpose and blah, blah, blah. So this was, of course, all on speakerphone, so everybody hears it and everybody's embarrassed. And Donna sort of tells Val to, like, feel what you're feeling, feel angry. And Valerie does not want to do that. So instead, Donna's like, well, then just get drunk. Let's just get drunk. So they do, and the next thing we see, Mark and Valerie are stumbling back to their little cabana. And Valerie sees the deck chairs, which are empty because it's at night. And she's like, I'm just going to lay here. I just want to lay on my deck chairs one time before we leave in the morning. So Mark goes back ahead. And so alone on the chair, alone with Jane and the cameras, that is, Valerie pulls out her phone and she wants to call Pauly G. So, of course, Jane like is so eager to have this that she's like, I'll dial it for you. I got it. So we get this phone conversation.
What are you doing?
I want to call him.
Oh, I can't find him. I want to call Polly G.
I'll do it.
Okay. Look under F for fatty. Did you hear that?
It's your name. Oh.
Okay. This is Polly G.
This is Valerie, Valerie Cherish. And word on the street is that you had a party. Fatty had a party. Fatty had a party and nobody came. No. Problem is that everybody came. And I wasn't invited. And that hurts my feelings. Okay? And you need to know that. Because I'm not going to keep it inside and get cancer.
So the next morning, Mark and Valerie drive back home from Palm Springs. They're more relaxed. They're less willing to jump through hoops, like how Jane wouldn't let them play the music in the car because of rights issues.
We can't play music. We can't afford it.
I'll pay. It's not me.
I want you to want me.
How about the quality of those Navigator cinema qualities?
I swear to God, I will pull over and put you out onto the side of the road.
And so they drive off and they listen to music, and it's like it's the rare triumphant moment for Valerie in probably the whole series. And then afterwards, sort of, she ends up, you know, regressing. This little moment of, you know, standing up for herself, of course, doesn't last. But it's a great momentary sort of win for Valerie on the small scale that it was. Overall, this was a show that stuck to its guns for its entire run. It's funny as hell, but it's also dark and deeply uncomfortable to watch, especially if you get vicariously embarrassed easily, which I do. At the time, I think I was a bit more put off by the harshness towards reality TV as a topic. It plays much better now that actors and actresses have stopped pretending like reality was going to take all their jobs away. It's one of the funniest and ballsiest shows of the 2000s for me. I think this episode is less of a typical comeback episode if you're looking for like an episode that really encapsulates what the whole series was. But I think it's an exceptional one. I think it's one that really stands out and sells the concept of Valerie as a whole rather than the smaller parts of the other episodes. I think it's great, and I hope to God season 2 lives up to the standard and, you know, doesn't ruin it all for everybody. That's it.
Do we know anything about what season 2 is going to be about?
I haven't heard.
I haven't either, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I watched every episode of this when it was on. This episode is tough. It's tough to watch. It's extra cringy.
Yeah.
But I like that you picked it because it shows us such a different side of Valerie, like what she's like at home with Mark.
Yeah.
And it also shows, like, you know, most, like every episode, she spends most of it being really annoying because that's what her character is. But at the same time, I mean, you know, it has that nice, as close as the show gets to, you know, hugging and learning is the closing where she says, I'll pay for the music. I'm going to, like, as a nice gesture to Mark, because she recognizes she's not so deluded that she doesn't recognize he's putting up with a lot of shit for her to do this.
Right.
And that all of this reality TV stuff has made the trip that could have been nice really unpleasant for him.
Yeah.
Also, his ass got on camera, so that probably wasn't something that he intended when they come to wake her up, because she needs to go and get her deck chairs, which she missed again.
That's kind of the thing with Valerie, though, is, like, she always sees it. You can always tell in those moments that, like, she sees what she's being like, and she sees how these things are intruding, and she just almost always just papers it over and just, like, you know, crashes on. And it's so to see that kind of a moment where she sort of allows herself to do something nice is good.
Yes, and to finally tell off the Lincoln guy.
Yes, God, so satisfying.
I mean, who has had the balls to, like, come over and bother them in the middle of dinner too? Like, we're not talking about the car. Fuck off.
Yeah.
But yes, what really makes this episode, of course, is Donna, who is incredible, great actress. I forget it. Dee Dee Rescher, is that her name?
Is it? I didn't make a note of it. I should have.
I think that's her name. Yeah. She also had a recurring role on King of Queens, sidebar, where she was married to Bryan Cranston. They were the next door neighbors to Kevin James and Leah Remini, who were super annoying in that too. And like, anyway, that's just a sidebar. She's amazing, and I love how the show gives her the fodder to make Valerie even more self-involved.
Yeah.
Because Valerie hears part of what she's saying, but of, you know, only the part that she can use.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating, and it just sort of deepens the character study that is this show. So, yeah. Excellent pick.
Thanks.
Sarah?
I loved watching Lisa Kudrow do this part. I had not seen this show before. She's such an actress, and I mean, I'm married to an actor, so I guess I get to say these things. Not really. if he were here, he'd be like, mm-hmm, and you forgot this other thing. But
does he do thank you prayer hands like Valerie does? One of my most hated tics?
As a joke, because he knows it bugs the shit out of me, and I'll get really scared that he's serious. And sometimes he mouths a bless.
I love it!
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, he's kind of the best. Anyway, so yeah, watching her do this and just like all the layers of like ticky insecurity and watching the gears grinding, like, how can I bring this back to myself in a positive way?
Yeah.
How can I like convert this for a first down? How can I not piss anyone off? Like, it's very sympathetic and also very annoying and like trying to watch. But at the same time, there were things about this that I think may not have aged well. Like, I think this might, the episode and the concept as a whole might have hit me on a sweeter spot when it first aired.
Yeah.
Because part of, I mean, first of all, discomfort comedy is kind of like, you know, here's another asshole being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's not that I didn't laugh, but it's kind of like, that's not quite as like new or open a field.
Yeah.
As it was. And there were bits of it that were a bit slow. Like the whole sequence with the Sonny Bono statue, I thought was just a little long. I don't actually buy that she'd be married to Mark or that Mark would be married to her.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, I know that had she been a housewife for a while before she did the, had the character been like just a housewife and out of the business for a while?
I can't quite remember.
I think that is what has happened.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's some like retcon that makes this relationship believable, like on the show, which I haven't seen, but just based on this, episode, it seems like he would be the Mr. Dina Manzo. Sorry. actually, not for long. She's back. Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Someone's catering business didn't work out, I guess. But the Mr. Dina Manzo, he'd be like, hell no, I'm not being on camera. You can't refer to me.
Yeah.
Don't show our kid. Like, that character seems like he'd be that guy and just would be, might have been married to her for a while, but would be exhausted by her.
Yeah.
And everything that living with her and getting her from sunup to sundown without having a nervous breakdown would entail.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure about the episode, but this performance is amazing. Was she ever nominated for anything with
this? She was. She got an Emmy nomination for this, the best actress.
That because
was the
it's sort of game. Like, I actually didn't love her on Friends. I thought she was a little like, I don't know, twee, I guess,
yeah.
But in The Opposite of Sex, she's the best.
Yeah,
she's great. So crabby. She's basically me in that movie. And then, but
she was
this
good on Scandal this season too. She's
she was.
Yeah, she was.
Of all the ex-friends, she's definitely the most like doesn't give a fuck. Like,
right.
She, yeah. She goes for it.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which I admire.
Totally true.
Yeah, and she still did not invent Post-its, which is unfortunate. For her, but that this performance was this like weird hybrid of that darkness of her Opposite of Sex character and then this like daffy note of Romy and Michelle's that, I don't know, it's a great performance. Kudos.
Yeah,
kudos,
she's
Kudrow.
Dave.
Yeah, I always kind of felt Kudrow. Like she deserved more post Friends than she got. I mean, she seems to like never quite get the role that would, you know, be the post Friends breakout, you know, like this seems right up her alley, sort of a mix of, you know, as Sarah was saying, you know, sort of a comedic and dark, My issue with this show/episode is I don't mind cringe comedy at all. Like I do, I will watch it through, you know, spread fingers over my eyes, but I enjoy this. Like The Office UK is one of my favorite series, and I'm not really big on The Office US, but The Office UK is really great. And I was sort of comparing David to what's her character's name? Valerie. And for me, the difference is why I really couldn't get into this as much as I was into The Office is that she is craven, you know, in a way where her motivation is her success and, you know, getting back into the limelight. And it's similar to David Brent, but he just wants to be liked. Like, he just wants to be, like, even though he's an asshole, he just, at the end of the day, kind of just wants to be the guy that gets invited for a pint with the rest of the gang.
But she wants that too. You see it more in other episodes where you see her interacting.
And
with
I was going
to
say, like, maybe, you know, this is as Sarah, you know, I'm just seeing a slice of this show, and Joe mentioned that this is a little bit of a outlier as far as the format goes, or you know, the set location, the circumstances. The I couldn't get into it in the same way I really got into The Office. Yeah, and I think it shares, you know, it's obviously cringe comedy. This is a couple years after the end of The Office and sort of the starting gun has been shot for cringe comedy, and this is, you know, HBO's crack at it. But I really enjoyed Lisa Kudrow a lot. I do agree with Sarah that there were some parts that kind of seemed like there was not much happening and could have used some punch up. Lisa Kudrow, great. I just kind of wish that maybe she was more, I don't want to say sympathetic because I don't think that's the right word, but I just wish it was easier to root for her. And either I want her to be more or less of that. You know, I want her to be more villainous or more empathetic or sympathetic of a character. And I kind of felt like it just was in the middle and I couldn't get into her, you know, journey such as it was because of that. But the end was great. The end where she just turns around, the clip there at the end, I will leave you on the side of the road, is great. And, there's some good moments. And the Donna character is great, you know, brassy, sassy. And there's lots here to enjoy. And I think I probably would have benefited from maybe a typical episode viewing than this one.
Sure.
But as it stands, I would say good, but not canon. Sarah?
Kudrow's. She's brilliant. Would watch again. I would watch another episode again and consider another episode. But as this does not feel typical of the series, and as I think there were some air pockets in it, and it hasn't held up as well as it might have on first airing, reluctant no.
Joe, I can't believe you. I can't believe you didn't mention Daniel Franzese as the obnoxious cell phone using Hollywood
Damien
mover
from
and
mean
shaker,
Girls.
Damien from Mean Girls, as the boyfriend of Jennifer Lee Scott.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
smoking a cigar in the pool
that Donna tells off when he's on his phone at dinner.
Yeah, that was yeah, that's true.
Anyway,
I was trying to streamline.
Not that it matters, but I would vote yes, partly just because of the showcase that it gives to Valerie and to Donna.
I would say, having watched this, I am curious how they're going to update this premise, whether she has sunk lower in the ranks,
or she has
found herself, or whether she has, you know, gained some measure of success because of, you know, what's happened here.
If she's 10 years older too, like that's a whole other strata for actresses. Like already the show was so much about like how little Hollywood has interest in women of her age, that they already made her this like dowdy old lady when she was
they made her Betty White in Hot in Cleveland before that was a thing.
Right. And like much, much younger. And so what happens if when she's 10 years older, like what happens to actresses and that? So that'll be interesting.
I would also say, before you play the last sound cue, Dave, that you and Sarah both might enjoy watching more of the episodes that are her on the set, because I think you would see more of her really trying pathetically to ingratiate herself, not just to her much younger and more nubile castmates on Room and Board, but also to Polly G, who is a great shithead character.
Is it the first episode where who's the director? The Cheers guy. Damn it! No, I'm not gonna.
Oh, James Burrows.
James Burrows, where she just annoys the shit out of him on set, trying to like work her lines and whatever, and finally he just has to tell her, it's just like, this is not an important enough scene to spend up this much time on, like, go away.
I forget which episode it is, but yes,
it's one of the first couple ones.
I will also say that for someone who doesn't appear in the episode, the Pauly G character is
he's a monster.
The fact that they get his whole character just into like a 4-word voicemail thing where he belches.
yep
yeah,
maybe I should change my vote.
It's a pretty good voicemail message.
Yep. It is pretty good. All the tools are there.
Yeah.
All right, The Comeback, Season 1, Episode 8. I'm sorry, Joe. Valerie relaxes in palm strings. You are not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Forgive me, Comeback fans.
Americans love you. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara, the winner.
Winner is Margaret Atwood, because...
Egghead likes her bookie book.
Yeah. Her trilogy of dystopic novels, the Mad Atom trilogy, which is Oryx and Crake.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, Year of the Flood and Mad Atom are being turned into a miniseries, I assume, for HBO, produced by Darren Aronofsky. So that is fascinating, and I can't wait to see what they do with it. I'm also excited for The Leftovers, another literary adaptation on HBO. So if this is a new direction that they're going in of like the few books Tara manages to read turned into TV shows, it's a very rich genre. It's not rich. I hardly read anymore. But I'm excited for this. They're great books. And
nice.
This will be very interesting.
What are the, I always ask you this every time that comes up, but that she has great names for all the like the genetically engineered.
Oh, yeah. Well, the antagonist animals that they, the few survivors of this apocalyptic event are trying to not get killed by are pigoons, which are pigs and raccoon hybrids.
Oh, no.
But there's also like genetically engineered food items. Chicky nubs. Basically, it's like a headless chicken that's like 8 breasts and that's it, because that's all people want to eat. And then there's another thing where it's like it's a restaurant chain where the whole premise is like, it's meat, but we're not going to tell you what it is. But I can't remember what it's called now. But anyway,
like those Harry Potter jelly bellies.
Yeah, yes. Right. The every flavor beans. Anyway, the books are really good. So if you enjoy sci-fi that's smart and scary, which I generally don't, but I will make an exception for Margaret Atwood, even when she writes about the apocalypse.
Sounds cool. All right. Sarah, loser.
My loser, which I selected so that my former editor at Soapnet.com could join me in pouring one out. Daytime Emmys couldn't find any place to be on TV this year because A, we're down to 3 soap operas. So B, it's like
4.
Best lady judge show, best boy judge show, best judge show where she has a lace collar outside her robes. There is one. So TV networks were all like, oh, there are still soaps? Pasadena. So... there will be a daytime Emmy Award ceremony on Sunday, June 22nd at 5 Eastern, which is a really awkward time
awful
to do
time,
it.
Yep.
And it will be streaming at daytimeemmys.net. But basically, the years when we would all tune in to see Susan Lucci lose again to Hunter Tylo or whoever. Can't believe I just pulled the name Hunter Tylo.
That's pretty good.
No effort. That's anyway.
Pretty good.
Dad, I'll write you a check for that college education just as soon as we're done recording. Daytime Emmys are our loser.
Guys, do you know what time it is?
It's game. I think so.
It is game time. Yay! All right. So to refresh everybody's memory, because we've been off for a couple weeks, this is the second game time of this season. Tara won our first game time, but her game time nemesis, Joe, is here to put the hurt on her.
That's right.
Thank God.
Today,
we meet again.
We are playing a game from LNC called Grim Reality.
Mm.
In this game, I'm going to give you pieces of information about a short-lived reality show, and you have to name the show.
Okay.
That's all there is to it. I'm going to give you, a description. I'm going to give you how many seasons it was on for, usually one.
Yep.
And I'll give you the network.
Okay.
And then you have to tell me the name of the show. We have some easy ones here, some hard ones here.
Okay. Can I just say, I thought based on the name, this was going to be...
Fairy Tales?
No, name the reality show where someone got killed.
Oh!
And I could think of a few.
There are almost enough. Yeah. We can have a game time wipeout.
Sounds like Megan wants a million. Save it.
Okay, all right.
That might be a hot potato thing. That sounds like a good hot potato category.
Shit.
We're welcome.
That is grim.
All right, so let's throw it over to Picky to see who goes first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, and then we're going to go to Joe and then to Sarah. So are we ready to play Grim Reality?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. These are each worth 1 point, I take it?
1 point,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
One season on UPN, five Amish teenagers live with six American teenagers and experience the modern world.
Oh, it's me.
Yes, it is you, Tara.
Was it just called Rumspringa? Shit.
Amish in the City.
That's it!
All right!
All right, Joe.
Yes.
Two seasons on ABC Family. Adolescents who have been living in the same room since childhood are chosen for random room makeovers.
Oh, God.
Two seasons. On a personal note, never heard of it.
Yeah, great. I think this was probably a drama, but I know there was an ABC Family show, I think, called Under One Roof.
Is it called Changing Rooms?
It's called Knock First.
Oh.
Knock wow. First. Okay.
All right. Sarah, two seasons on TLC, which stands for nothing. A rabbi would spend 10 days with families to help them work through difficult problems. Let's solve some problems. Why not?
I think this was Rabbi Shmuley.
I'm going to get you in that anthill. I'm going to eat you.
Rabbi Shmuley of the 30 Rock reference?
Yeah. He's a real guy.
Yeah.
That was me doing Ant in the Aardvark, by the way.
Yes, we know.
Just in case nobody else knows. Why is he doing that?
Why is Dracula a rabbi?
You live long enough.
I have one question for you. Are you kosher? Blah. So tough.
Benson.
Shalom in the Home.
Oh, no! Yeah!
All right, back to Tara. One season on NBC.
Yep.
Inspired by the film Meet the Parents, male contestants must win the approval of their girlfriend's demanding families.
Is it Meet My Folks?
That's our first point of the game.
I watched that.
Joseph.
Yes.
Reedley. One season on Fox. Six past figure skater champs are paired with six celebrities in this competition show.
I believe it was called Skating with Celebrities.
Correct.
Well done.
All right, Sarah.
Yep.
One season on UPN. UPN. A program in which men use their player skills to attempt to seduce women. The show was hosted via phone by the ultimate player, who was revealed at the end to be Survivor's Boston Rob.
No!
Wow.
I never even heard
of
that.
Oh, my God.
And now I have to go and watch it right now.
Seriously.
The pickup artist?
Good guess. It's called The Player.
Jeez.
Wow, I never heard that. I think
we might
have to do some sort of report on this show.
That sounds amazing.
Agreed. All right, back to Tara. Oh, did I mention there's like 40-something questions?
Okay.
Sure.
Just lost my place. To Tara. 12, one season on ABC. 12 contestants attempt to walk from Boston to Washington, D.C., trying to lose weight and avoid being voted off at each stage.
Fat March.
Wow.
Oh, God,
America.
I miss you, Fat
Not
March.
Not to be confused with Stephen King's The Longest Walk.
That's the best title of a show I've never watched a single episode of, but man, I will never forget it. Fat March.
Okay, for some reason, I have no network for you on this one, Sarah.
This is Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joe. But it's one season.
Okay.
Contestants are chosen by America to marry each other without...
Fox.
Thanks,
Sarah.
Without ever having met. Must get engaged upon meeting each other and then try to avoid elimination before their wedding day, at which point they could decide to marry or not.
I'm shouting this one out to Linda, right? That's who
I
shouted out to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shout out Linda, Married by America.
Yep.
Correct.
Still one of her, most... terrible bête noir shows she ever recapped. She's still mad about it.
I know she and Dan McEachern each have one.
Don't say the other one.
I will not.
It's in here.
I will not. I'm sure it's here. Yeah.
All right, Sarah. TBS, one season. a bachelor-type show which involved 12 female contestants competing for the heart of a male underwear model in the Australian outback. Hello, mate.
That's so much.
Oh, my God.
There's so many moving parts.
Yep. Gotta guess.
Can I hear the description once
more?
Yeah,
you betcha. And Bachelor, a bachelor-type show, which involved 12 female contestants competing for the heart of a male underwear model in the Australian outback.
The Thunder Down Under.
Oh, you know what? That's a really good guess. And the show also rhymes. It's called Outback Jack.
Oh, of course.
Oh. Outback Jack. All right, so we're back to Tara.
Yep.
One season, ESPN. This show followed Barry Bonds as he chased the home run record set by Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron.
Oh, I remember this was a show. Big Head Barry and the Monsters.
Anybody else know it?
No, I don't.
It's called Bonds on Bonds.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Sidebar about ESPN. I was staying in a hotel last week. Holy cow, there are a lot of ESPNs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. They're well beyond Ocho.
Hotels, make sure you get them all plus the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So to Joe.
Yes.
One season on ABC, the American Broadcasting Company?
Company.
Corporation.
Colossus.
Company. I think it's company.
Joe would know.
I would know.
That's true. I apologize. Of That's course okay. Joe would know.
10 high school students compete for a full scholarship to the college of their choice.
Dang. 10 high school students. Early admission.
The Scholar.
The Scholar.
The Scholar. All right.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember that.
Bringing us into our first score break for Sarah. One season on Fox. A female contestant spent time at a ranch with a mix of gay and straight men, all pretending to be straight, and she had to eliminate those she believed to be gay in order to receive a cash prize at the end. Wow. That's a lot. One season on Fox.
One girl, 12 gays?
No. Was it playing it straight?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm not even on the board.
Sarah looking to get on the board, as she mentioned. Joe and I are tied with 2 APs.
All right. Ooh, it's boy. A tough game. So
it is a tough game.
Yeah.
But fun.
Who remembers these garbage shows? That's what the title of this game should be.
Okay, so this is back to Tara.
Yep.
One season on Fox, a unique hybrid of reality TV, a game show, and a murder mystery drama. Contestants acted as investigators trying to solve a series of murders and tried to avoid being murdered each week themselves.
Is this Murder in Small Town X?
Nice!
Nice pull.
All right, Joe.
Jeez, yes.
One season on Bravo, a group of 4 hosts known as the Gal Pals make over women in all areas of their lives.
Ew.
A group of 4
hosts known as the Gal Pals make over women in all areas of their lives.
So it was a queer eye jump off. God. I don't know.
Take a guess.
Straight eye for the queer guy. I don't know.
Queer eye for the straight girl.
Girl! Yeah.
All right. Sarah. Yep. One season on NBC, the National Broadcasting Corporation. 7 families go on a road trip and compete against each other in challenges at famous landmarks around the United States. Vaguely remember this.
Oh, yeah. I do vaguely remember this, too, actually.
Rock This RV.
The Great American Road Trip.
Right.
All right. Tara.
God, I'm
doesn't sound that great. Yes?
One season on the CW.
Right.
In situations straight out of horror movies, 13 contestants compete to stay alive and face their deepest fears. Oh my God. To win a prize of $66,000,
oh,
666.
Jesus. Yeah.
I know this
and
is.
And probably 66 cents.
Probably. Yeah. I know this is probably not right. Is it The Scream?
13, Fear is Real.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
All right. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
One season on Fox. Joe, yes. Described as a mix of Survivor, Temptation Island, and The Love Boat, 16 singles compete in a game of seduction for a cash prize and a chance at love.
If it's the one I think it is... I fucking loved this show.
There are so many of them, and they all were on Fox, though.
And they all were on, like, at the same time.
Yeah.
Is this one Paradise Hotel?
Is it Love Cruise?
Yep. It is Love Cruise.
Damn it.
That was sort of a crapshoot there, Joe. You just had to take a shot at one of them.
They were both on literally, like, the same summer.
Yeah. That is the equivalent of the Invasion.
Yeah. Threshold.
Yeah.
Yep.
Surface.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Damn it. Crisis.
One season on Fox, Sarah. One season, Fox Network. A contestant had to convince her family that she was going to marry a man in 12 days' time without any of them objecting at the wedding. However, her fake fiance was an actor tasked with making things difficult.
Rock the Love Boat.
Is it My Big Fat Idiot Fiancé?
I thought it was Obnoxious, but it's not.
Big Fat Obnoxious Fiancé.
Yeah.
I think I actually watched that, too.
Yeah.
That guy went on to be the bartender on Grey's Anatomy.
On Grey's Anatomy,
early on.
Yep.
All right, so, I'm sorry, who's this for?
Me.
Okay, Tara. One season on Bravo.
Yep.
A gay man had to choose a potential mate from a group of 15 men with the twist that some were gay and some were straight. He would win a cash prize if he correctly chose a gay man at the end.
What was this piece of shit called?
I can't believe that piece of shit was on Bravo.
I also watched this one, and I can't remember what it was called either.
It wasn't called Gay?
Was it like some stupid... Was it like Boy Meets Boy or something?
I need an answer.
Okay, was it Boy Meets Boy?
Yep.
Oh!
Nice.
Got it. Damn it.
Win, lose, or buy.
All right. One season on NBC, Joe.
Yep.
Three-person teams travel across the U.S. and Europe in search of seven artifacts, which will lead to the key. And find the key, find the treasure.
I watched at least two episodes of this and then gave up. What the fuck was it called? Like, The Quest?
That is a show that is coming up called The Quest. This is okay. Treasure Hunters.
Treasure Hunters.
Treasure Hunters. Isn't that the show we got that terrible flyer for that I put up on the site with the guy in the...
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, check out the TV, previously TV swag bag topic for a awesome flyer from the show. It's 12 kinds of terrible. It's amazing.
It was like the print version of a Sell Us Your Gold commercial. Basically.
It was. It really was.
Yeah. If those companies were run by, like, pirates.
One season on Fox, Sarah. Modeled after The Bachelor, this show involved a little person seeking love from a group of ladies who included fellow little people and average-sized women.
I was hoping I'd get this one.
What's the show?
Little Person, Big Heart.
So close. The Littlest Groom?
The Littlest Groom is the right answer, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Man. Back to Tara. One season on Fox / Fox Reality.
Okay.
So you know it was good if it was on Fox Reality.
Ooh. Yep.
A contestant had to correctly guess her biological father from a group of 25 men in order to win $100,000. Wow. Jesus, Fox.
Who's your daddy?
Nice.
They couldn't call it anything else.
Yeah.
They
really couldn't.
All right, for Joe, two seasons on ESPN. Contestants had to get from one point in the U.S. to another, competing sports-themed challenges along the way, and were not allowed to take anything with them besides the clothes on their backs and their driver licenses.
I vaguely remember that this was a thing.
This sounds really complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they only could travel on Thursdays and Tuesdays.
I have no idea.
The show is called Beg, Borrow, and Deal.
Deal, yeah. Deal.
Yeah. All right, bringing us into our second score break for Sarah. Two seasons on VH1, as Video Hits. Video Hits, that stands for.
Mm-hmm.
A group of unknown actresses compete for a role in a horror film. Winners appeared in Saw 6 and Saw 3D. What's that show name, Sarah?
Scream Queens?
Yeah!
Totally guessed!
Yes!
I retire.
All right. Sarah has 1 point. Joe has 2. I have 5.
All right.
Okay.
So, 1, 2, 5.
Correct.
Yes. And we're back to Tara.
Yep.
That show sounds kind of good, actually.
It's not bad.
I remember seeing clips of it on The Soup. It looked kind of entertaining.
One season, CBS.
Yep.
5 celebrities trained to become reserve officers on the Muncie, Indiana Police Force.
Sounds thought thrilling. I had it, and then I didn't. It's not boot camp.
I can name cast members, but not the show.
Really?
Sarah?
I don't remember the name of the show, but Eric Estrada is still a cop and quite proud of it. And so is Jack Osborne, but I don't remember the name of the show.
Armed and Famous.
Yes.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah. All right, Joe. 2 seasons on NBC. Children pick their father's new bride from a group of female contestants.
Ew.
Who wants to marry my dad? Yes.
Bam, done.
Not this guy.
Educated guess.
All right.
Educated in quotation marks, I will say.
1 season on Fox, Sarah. Hmm? 9 strangers are locked in a bunker until they unanimously award the prize money to one contestant, with the size of the prize dropping with each person who leaves.
The 9.
The bunker?
No, it's just called unanimous, but the I is a 1.
Oh,
right.
Barf.
Oh.
Yes, barf indeed. All right, so we're back to Tara. 1 season on NBC, centered around the question, who is the most important woman in a man's life? This show focused on a group of mothers helping to choose the perfect woman for their sons.
Oh, boy. It should be called Run for Your Life, ladies, but I don't actually know what it is called.
It was called Yenta Time.
It was called Mama Boys.
Barf.
I'll just sit here in the dark.
Our first entry from Spike TV.
Oh, shit.
So, oh,
yeah, 1 season, Joe. Described as Jackass meets Little People, Big World. Oh, boy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it focuses on little person wrestlers. That's it.
Oh, awesome. Little person wrestlers.
Who are trying to get boat loans.
The Littlest Fighter? I don't know.
Short rounds?
Close. Half pint brawlers.
Oh, no. Short rounds is so better, though. That's such a better name.
All right. Let's see. What do we got here for Sarah? 1 season on MTV Music Television. Music Television is what that stands for. But, like, they don't show any music videos anymore. Am I right? Why do they call it MTV? It should just be called something TV, right? Yeah. Okay. Chronicling the... chronicles the courtship, engagement, and wedding of Britney Spears and Kevin Federline.
Oh
my god, I remember who recapped this. It's like Britney and
Were
Kevin.
Were we ever so young?
And there's like an adjective. It's like Britney and Kevin, radical, but it's not that.
I will tell you there is a colon involved.
Yes. It's
2 of them, in fact. No. No.
Britney and Kevin, colon. Crazy in Love?
Close. Brittany and Kevin. Chaotic.
Chaotic.
Chaotic. Oh.
Yep. All right. 2 seasons.
Yep.
2 seasons on Fox.
Yes.
Women who were deemed ugly were given extreme makeovers, including plastic surgery, with a pageant at the end of each season to select a winner.
The Swan?
Correct. Joe, 1 season on Fox. Hosted by Monica Lewinsky, contestant search for love among 20 mask-wearing men. Sounds like one of our parties, right?
Okay.
God,
there was a whole 3 shows that were very similar. Mr. Personality?
Yeah!
Yes!
Nice.
From the depths of your subconscious, swam
from
up.
From the depths of my shame, really, let's be honest.
All right, 1 season on the WB. Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially a spoof of American Idol, contestants were told they were competing to be the best singer when actually they were competing to be the worst.
I remember this vaguely. I'm not sure what the title is, so since apparently in this game time I'm only here to amuse by making shit up. What's funny? American Flats.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Superstar USA. Right. Never would have got that in a million years.
Okay.
All right, so we're back to Tara.
Yeah.
MTV, one season, watch as Carmen Electra and Dave Navarro plan their anything but traditional wedding. God. Those two.
Oh.
It also has a colon in it, but does not have the word chaotic.
Dave and Carmen, chicky nubs.
Yes. I would watch that.
Till death do us part, Carmen and Dave.
Oh my God.
All right, Joe. One season on Fox. A plus-size man searches for love among 20-plus-size women. Oh, man. This title.
Oh, no.
This title Sarah might come up with just by... Okay.
Thanks.
Is it More to Love?
Yes!
Oh,
wow.
Yes! Amazing!
All right. So bringing us into our third score break before we run out the rest of the questions for Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
One season on USA Network. Hosted by former Survivor contestant Rudy Bosch?
Bosch.
Yeah. This show pitted military and police teams against each other in mission scenarios.
SWAT versus SWAT?
Combat missions.
Generic title.
All right, y'all have three questions left, so let's hear the scores.
Okay, well, Sarah has one.
Yep.
Joe has five. I have six.
Oh, so it is a game.
It is.
So we're back to Tara.
Yes.
One season on MTV.
Music television?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. But, you know, like... I don't even want to go there anymore. 14 amateur surfers explore the world's greatest surf locations while competing for the chance to go professional.
Tara, you love surfers.
Yeah.
Money.
Girl surfers, at least.
Trouble with the curl.
When you said girl surfers, Joe, I was like, uh-oh, because the show's called Surf Girls. I thought that might have triggered something.
Oh, shit, I did not mean to give you clues.
It didn't work anyway.
I was going to say something like, and you love Blue Crush, and then I realized, oh, this is basically Blue Crush, the reality show.
Yeah.
I was on TV the other day. Holds up.
So good.
Our first entry from A&E, that's Asses and Ears
right.
Network. One season for Joe. Essentially a combination of American Idol and Big Brother. Aspiring singers undergo both a weekly live singing competition and live together, filmed constantly. Never going to get this one.
Wow. I was going to say, I've never heard of this.
Nope.
So you think you can sing? I don't know.
Making a music star.
I have heard of that one.
Yeah,
that's an object lesson.
Familiar.
Yeah, just simplify, guys. Simplify that title.
Yeah.
Okay, so NBC, one season for Sarah. A talent competition in which America voted to pick the two new leads for a revival of a popular musical.
Oh, yeah.
Broadway stars.
Knowing the musical would help, I would say.
Yes, it would. It's Grease, colon.
You're the one that I want?
Grease that colon.
That's right.
You're the one that I want. Correct. Yeah. All right, so we are back to Tara.
Yes.
One season. Mm-hmm. One season logo. Logo, our first logo. That stands for lovely, I don't know.
Okay,
a competitive dating show starring transgender artist Calpurnia Adams.
Sure.
It is not called Sure.
That's it? That's the whole description?
That's it. Competitive dating show starring transgender artist Calpurnia Adams. Got an answer?
No.
No, you don't.
I can't even think of anything amusing.
Trans-American
Adams and Eve?
Trans-American love story.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
Love story. Adams and Eve is better.
All right, Joe. Yes. One season ABC.
Uh-huh.
13 contestants live in a manor with one... dying each week at the hands of a killer among them.
Who done it?
Nice!
Yes.
Recapped every episode.
Yeah. I watched the whole thing.
One season, CBS, Sarah.
Yep.
Following 16 modern-day pirates on their quest for gold, This show is based on the fictional legend of Henry Steele and the Treasure of Zanzibar, which was supposedly divided into 14 parts and hidden throughout the island of Dominica. Done. And communication. What's that
Treasure
show?
Treasure Island?
Nope. Okay. Pirate Master.
Pirate Master.
I thought that was
Pirate
on NBC.
Master.
Pirate Master.
It's on an island. Call it Treasure Island. I'm trying on a fucking game time over here.
Yeah.
All right. Continue. So everybody has one question left.
If I may, I know this is not time for a score break.
I was going to ask for a score break.
Well, Joe and I are tied with 6 apiece, and Sarah has one.
All right.
Sarah is near. Thanks.
This is an exciting piece of business because this last question is worth 5 points.
What?
No, it's not. okay. Tara.
Yes.
One season on the CW. Mm-hmm. Each episode focused on a long-term dating couple nominated by friends. Each couple had to either set a wedding date or break up in a week's time.
Hitch or ditch?
Pardon?
Hitch or ditch?
So
ditch or ditch?
Hitched or ditched?
No!
Come on.
Wow.
Was that an educated guess? You pull that
no,
out of your ass.
I just guessed.
Holy shit.
Damn it.
I am really sorry you didn't get the point for that because that was fucking amazing.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
Again, it's like, what else could they have called it, really?
Wow.
You've been in this business too long, you
Tara, 2 Dave points. 2 Dave points for that answer. All right,
and
Joe.
A Sarah point. And a spouse Sarah. Points. You're showered in spouse points.
One season on CBS, Joe. Here's your last question. 4 people agreed to be chained to a member of the opposite sex for 4 days for a chance at love and $10,000. I remember this one. I even remember who recapped it.
Wait,
me too.
CBS?
I'm so afraid of getting this wrong, but I think it's... Is it Chains of Love? Yes!
Not CBS? You
it's
think
not
it's,
CBS. All right.
It was like
point.
CW
was
or WB or something UPN. Like that, right? UPN.
Maybe the networks got mixed up, because it seems to me that there's been
I was gonna,
a few.
Yeah, I thought NBC was Pirate right. Master, but whatever. It doesn't
okay. Matter. I mean, nobody knows what these ones were
no.
on.
No. But nice work, Joe.
All right. Sarah, here's your last one. One season, maybe on TBS, maybe on any other network, a group of men thought they would be competing on a show called All American Man, but in a twist found themselves to be competing to act as effeminate as possible. God.
Great work, TBS.
This smells like this has VH1 all over it, frankly.
Jesus Christ.
I think you meant Jesus Christ.
A Little Light in the Loafers?
It's called Sissy That Walk. It aired for one season.
That bitch.
That bitch. All
keep,
of these
keep
are
guessing. Floor's open. I'm not. I'm
it's
not
in the
open.
Wrist? Kind of not joking. Is that it?
He's a lady.
Oh, God.
He's
oh, God.
A lady.
Man.
All right.
That's,
so
I'm offended by humanity right now. And also by my lone point.
I think I know, but Tara, lay it on me. The final scores.
Well, Sarah has 1. Yay. I have 6. Joe has 7 pointeroonies.
Yeah. Holy cow, pointeroonies. And I just realized I actually still have this.
Yay! Joe!
Yeah!
Joe, I cut it off.
Team
Fenty.
Joe!
All right, Shits and Giggles tiebreaker time.
Yes.
All right.
One season, NBC, I can't confirm NBC is correct, with only a backpack full of clothes and information
lost.
About the... Yeah, Lost is correct.
Oh, Other Lost.
Other Lost, the Conan O'Brien
Lesser
produced
Lost.
Yep. Yes, correct.
So now, right. Since it didn't come up, we can say Dan McEachern's Married by America is Bachelorettes in Alaska, Looking for Love. It was not in there somehow.
Oh, boy. Yikes.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that is it for another maxi-size, extra hot, great, almost 2 hours. We didn't fall back when it came time to springing into action with our summer TV picks and pans before going around the dial with stops at Veep, Hollywood Game Night, West Wing, Clone High, True Tory, and remind me of other ones?
Louie.
And another
Turn.
T-show.
And Turn.
Thank you. Joe unsuccessfully pitched us the Palm Springs episode of The Comeback for the Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Joe, for the Value Guest Camp, was the winner of this week's reality show Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano...
Aloe vera, please.
Sarah D. Bunting.
1 point.
And Joe Reed.
I don't need to see that.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
She's got a tongue like an electric eel, and she likes the taste of a man's tonsils.